every week in the county jail feels like a month. Every month feels like a year. So I'm in there for almost a year, and then I plea out. I'm eligible for like a drug program to get a time cut. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. But then they, you know, I get sent to a maximum. I've been getting in so many fights, and I got so many tickets now from just being in the county jail.
Internal tickets.
Yeah.
From
just write-ups and shit, hole shots, you know, 30 days in the hole. Because that'll happen if you're in there for long enough, right?
Because people are constantly.
Yeah, because you're losing your mind just from, you know, I got in a fight with a guy who was like a buddy of mine just so we could get out of the dorm and go to the hole for a week, you know, get some jack time.
Yeah.
But so my security level was way up. So I had to go do time in a maximum security.
Where?
Two Rivers. It's now a medium. They classed it down since then. It's now a medium security. And then I was at OSP, Oregon State Penitentiary, for a couple of weeks. And that was wild because I'm like, it looks like Folsom. You know what I mean? They got the gun towers, old school shit, fucking drugs everywhere.
Are there any, you know, you see this in media and stuff like that. Is there any sort of like talking to you separation? You're going to go with these guys.
Oh yeah. It's all segregated. I mean, it's not as serious as California prisons. Yeah. Right. But yeah, it's completely segregated like that, but it's not racist. I mean, look, I play basketball with black people and I'm working in the kitchen next
to. That's what I was going to ask you. Like, did anybody look you up and down and say, can you play ball?
Of course. Of course they did. Yeah. No, I got recruited. I got drafted my first day in there.
It's for a look at you like, hey, look at this Larry Bird looking motherfucker. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an asset, I imagine.
For sure.
Fuck a day. Yeah.
But there's no taboo around that. You just can't, like, people are doing business, cigarettes, drugs. You know, you just don't, usually. Actually, it is taboo what I did playing with the blacks, but races are mixing all the time in there, right? Yeah. So it's just you sit with your own race, you are on the yard working out with your own race,
yeah.
But that's about it. Everybody's doing business, you know.
And when you say everybody's doing business, I imagine you're learning more about your tradecraft in there that you wish you would learn in the past.
Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely.
I mean, this is basically a concentration of people that have hindsight and also experience.
Yeah.
So these places are fucking universities. That's college.
Oh, my God.
What are you learning?
The Department of Connections. That's what we called it.
What are you learning in there?
They're like, what the fuck? You how much cash? You know? And yeah. So everybody had a story about how I fucked up. You know, everybody, you know, just makes me feel horrible. But what did I learn? I mean, definitely like, oh... Definitely that I didn't need that much cash to like get out of the game and start like a legitimate business. That was like the real moral of the story is like I completely overdid it.
You overshot it.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were like, well, yeah, you fucked up, you know, by just having it on you like that. I mean, it's plain and simple. Like possession is 9/10 of the law. And that's part of the reason that I started shipping product because it's like I don't want to be... You know, unless my phone is tapped, I'm not in possession when that box arrives to that person in Manhattan, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, you get...
So they were saying how much would have been enough for you to just to start figuring your way out? 500 grand?
Yeah, right, exactly. So it was more... I didn't learn as much... I mean, I heard a lot of crazy stories, but most of them were not true. Everybody's a liar in jail.
No.
If you can believe it. But no, it was mostly like my studying and reading and learning where I'm like, damn, yeah, I really didn't have to. Because when I got a chance to like step away from the game, that's when I really got to put things in perspective. And,
yeah.
And like I never had time to really like consider what else I could do with my life.
Because you're too busy.
Right.
Doing it.
Exactly. Exactly.
What is that life after you come out of that?
Well, I got out in 2012, and then I moved to LA and started doing stand-up comedy pretty soon after that. I was taking acting classes, writing screenplays and shit. It's a hard pivot.
That's an absurd pivot. So you go to LA, which is, you know, it is its own place.
Yeah.
You start doing comedy.
Yeah, 2014. I was originally I wanted to be like an actor and a screenwriter and shit like that, but it just wasn't for me.
What's your early material like look like?
My early material was like cleaner. Like I was ashamed. I didn't want to talk about prison, so I was like trying to be like a much more like observational comic. But then I started like telling, like thinking about all the funny shit that happens in prison. I started like doing jokes. You know, I would do jokes about that and then would just kill. And people would be like, that's so fucking interesting. Yeah. Like, talk about that more. So that's how I started to
You were kind of keeping that side of that past of you hidden because you wanted to be something else.
And yeah, I wanted to be like accepted by the industry. But by then, the industry was all, it was being overtaken by social media so rapidly that it didn't even matter, you know?
So you started talking openly about the funny side of a very dark fucking thing.
Yeah, but there's so much funny to it. There's so much funny. Everybody, like during like the mid-2010s, everybody was podcasting. You know, podcasting with Joe Rogan was blowing up. I saw you, I think, in 2018?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's fucking cool. I was like, and then I would see these funooks, these fucking maricones from Vice News talking about the drug game, talking about the Sinaloa cartel.
You know, like, okay, so you
some
start
assholes from Oxford.
Yeah, we're going to get into this, which is great. You start doing comedy. You start speaking openly about some of the things that not only did you have direct experience, but you know, you have an emotional suffering attached to some of those things. So when you talk about some of these things, even in a funny way, there's almost a responsibility there, you know, in a lot of ways. You start seeing people online, social media, Vice, which I have issues with, but we'll talk about it. But you start seeing basically these tourists of a sort.
Right.
Showing up in a field somewhere where a guy's cooking up a batch of meth somewhere in Sinaloa with a stick and asking them, you know, in this Aussie accent or English accent, asking them these absurd fucking questions. Is your mind just in pain listening to this guy just asking the most stupid questions?
I heard a guy, and I think this was either Vice or like a British National Geographic, maybe.
Was he a buff guy?
I know that. Ross Kemp. Ross Kemp was old school. Yeah. He was like an old school like documentary. He actually had pretty good documentaries. But this guy he went to Culiacan, and he was talking to this guy who had a mask on, right? And he was like, what would you do right now? And this is a serious question. He really asked this. He really like thought about this and wrote this down in his things to ask this guy.
Moleskine notebook.
What would you do if you found out I was a police officer? And the guy was like, what the you really going to make me answer that? He no, literally, because like Mexicans are so fucking cool. Like he didn't bite. You know what I mean? He's like, am I in danger right now? And the guy was like, if you don't cause problems, like, no, we're chill. Yeah. You know, Mexicans have a real like logic. Like they don't, you know, that you guys, there's something about the Mexican sensibility that's really makes you feel like an idiot sometimes.
Our normal is absurd. Our baseline normal is absurd as a Mexican.
And I felt so bad for that, whoever that guy was. I think he was like a hitter. They said he'd killed a bunch of people, but I was like, this is the worst interview I've ever seen. And it wasn't until the pandemic when, you know, everybody was making online content.
COVID hit and everybody was stuck.
Yeah, exactly.
And we were just doom scrolling.
Exactly. And I had written a novel about my experience and it did pretty well. And, you know, but I was just watching like, you know, it was a mix of how much I hated like that journalistic approach to filming like narco content. And then also watching like ex-gangbangers who had channels like that.
Oh, yeah.
Who were like the craziest shit I've seen in a Mexican prison. But I'm like, okay. And that has like 10 million views. But it's horrible production quality. He's not articulate. He's not very articulate. And he doesn't have like, there's no entertainment value behind that. Like, what if I melded the two? What if I married the journalism with the actual like real hand experience and articulated it from a real perspective. So, you know, and also normal people can understand.
And also the entertainment aspect of it, because you're now entertaining people with your stories, and storytelling is a big part of actually communicating an experience. I mean, there's no way, I can tell you what putting something up your ass and doing a kite from one prison to another might look like from my point of view, but how can you articulate it to somebody that hasn't been there?
Right. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. We're just going to like forget about the being overtly comedic. Let's start putting these videos out.
You started by basically sharing some of your personal story.
Exactly. And it just overnight, it just fucking blew up.
Did you start like, hey, let me see who I can invite over that would want to talk about some of these things.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ran out of my own story. So that's why I started interviewing other people, you know?
When I was there at your place, and I've been looking at some of the other interviews. Yeah, I think you recently interviewed this lawyer that I've been following for a while.
Yeah, Rosenberg. Shout out to Rosenberg.
I don't think he's not real. He's great though. He's an amazing lawyer.
Yeah, he's a robot though. He wouldn't give us anything.
But he
gave us everything and nothing.
Amazing guy though. Like I'm fascinated by that dude. Mm-hmm. Having people over and talking about some of these things. I mean, as somebody that has experience with it and how some things are not supposed to be talked about. How things sometimes are kind of like quiet or dangerous for people to talk about. Like what type of measurement or guesstimation do you have as far as talking to some of these people? Do you prepare for it? Or
try and outline that? So a few people that I've talked to in the middle of the interview, I'm like, oh, you're fucking lying to me.
Yeah.
I don't like that. But we still put the interview out because we're putting out content. We're a machine now. But I try to get as much information out of them as possible. That's what I pride my show on, is like how it actually works. Like, what is it really like? Because they're not touching on like, and so I still really haven't figured out how cartels exactly work in Mexico.
Yeah.
And I was at for like 6 months, I was obsessed with bringing people on my show who could shed light on it. And I think I have a better grasp of it, but I just think it's a very complicated thing. And I don't think there's one answer. But, you came on and gave me a diametrically opposite answer to, my friend Luis, who's a journalist.
Yeah.
So I think I've kind of like made my peace with the fact that like there's not going to be a scientific answer to these things.
I guess like Luis Chaparro, great.
Great guy.
Amazing risk taker.
Yeah, no shit. I get scared for him sometimes.
Amazing guy, though.
Yeah.
But I think perspective is very important. Mm-hmm. I was not a journalist. I worked on the ground, and I did things, and I worked with people. And I got to experience things directly, not only by working in law enforcement in one of the most dangerous cities on the planet at that point, which is now again on that list.
Yeah.
But going after people that I used to hang with and skateboard with, who then turned into heavy hitters for cartels. And then going through that process, being basically used up by the government here until I was no longer useful and being fucking shat out like discarded. And seeing the whole process from high levels, because I was involved in security of politicians at the highest level. And also I was involved in, operations at the ground level. Mm-hmm. So I got to see a larger scope of the issue and the problem.
Right.
Now, how do cartels work and how do they operate? I think what's changed, at least when I was active to now, is that we used to call them la mano peluda, or the hairy hand is the way we would call it, right? Like there was different names, la maña. We would have these different ways of calling it. And all of these names involve multiplicity. So like la mano peluda, it's different fingers.
Mm.
And we were part of a very successful fight, at least in my area's responsibility. So much so that the guy that used to lead us, who I actually had on the podcast, Lisa Ola, He's currently in the running to have his old job back, and he's trying to get his old team together.
Right now.
Right? But I am... Fuck that.
Has he tried to recruit you?
Yeah. But I'm fucking gone. Uh-huh. No fucking way. And also, I couldn't probably couldn't pass the piss test for me, but it's fine. What has come apparent to me is that whatever that problem was in the past, let's say 10 years ago, where it's a single organization that has different federations around it that then sends drugs to the U.S. and then has some sort of control over what they're doing, has become almost global.
Yeah.
In its way. Things that people don't take into account when it comes to the what a cartel is now is the fact that they have supply lines coming in from China.
Mm.
That it is very much politicized and very much utilized as a weapon of destabilization against the United States now.
Right.
There's no single cartel in Mexico. There's hundreds of small entities in Mexico that thrive on local drug markets.
Right.
But also on making a highway to the U.S. as far as drugs.
That's a huge thing that I've realized is that a lot of these, what's going on here in Tijuana, and we were talking about this off pod, and what's happening even in Juarez, there's huge demand, local demand for drugs. I always thought these were battling it out for control of drug routes to the U.S.
No.
I was like, Mexicans don't have money to buy meth.
Yeah, I mean,
they do.
I mean, a lot of,
you know,
Ovidio and a lot of the Los Chapitos and what's happening out there, they're fighting for local markets.
Yeah.
Like that, a lot of the conflict is local.
Yeah. So there's money in these domestic markets, even though it's pesos, it's still lucrative.
Yeah.
Probably makes up for money that they've lost from now that the weed export market is basically done, right? There's not much of an export to the U.S. anymore.
So the American dream is Mexico.
Yeah.
Now, right. Well, I mean, Tijuana is an example of that. Tulum is horrible right now because of all the Americans living down there.
Yeah.
And seeing some of the killings and violence in some of the resorts is a sign of local drug markets now no longer needing to export a bulk of their product. They could just keep it in Mexico because this is where the Americans are partaking in the same behaviors that they would in the U.S.
Is there enough of a demand from expats for drugs to cause violence in a place like Tulum?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, they're you're already seeing it.
Right.
It's not just that. It's also other aspects of diversification with some of these criminal organizations. I mean, it's just not. So let's say here, it's drugs. It's
people.
Money. People, money laundering, people trafficking, in paid extortion or paid protection rackets that make them. I mean, we just had probably four or five smoke shops that popped up that are popping up all over Tijuana being burned. And I think one of the employees were killed. And these clearly paid protection type things where they're being warned.
That's like Italian mafia kind of shit, right?
That's
like you're gonna pay a peso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's happening here. Mm-hmm. And also you're seeing, I mean, if you go to Colombia now, you're gonna see a lot of Mexicans down there.
Yes, of course. We know that. They're now cooking and making fentanyl in luxury apartments in Bogota.
Yeah.
And they're also funding coca leaf grows in southern Colombia. Wild.
Mexico has some dangerous parts to it, and there's some dangerous things. I mean, if you're a drug dealer in Mexico and you're working for a single cartel, guess who are you a target of? The rival cartel. Because you're the only
Jalisco
exposed part of that organization on a street corner trying to sell your shit. That's mostly who gets killed here. But then you start going into these, there's a lot of them, so there's a lot of competition, and there's less money to be made on drugs. So they have to expand. So paid extortion. You know, then you get these organizations are now involved in trafficking people. Mm. So now we have armed security on the Mexican side, and it's not the government, it's the cartels.
Right.
So you start seeing this.
But gringos who move down here don't see any of that. Do they?
I mean,
like you're not to touch a gringo, right? Remember they killed those people in like Nuevo Laredo?
Yeah,
remember that? And
yeah.
they wrote the cartel. I think it was like the Cartel del Golfo or whatever.
They wrote an apology.
Yeah, they were like, "That was not us." And they made the guys go turn themselves in.
Yep, it's a beehive that they don't really shouldn't kick.
Right.
But with the way things are now, I think it's bound to happen. And on the US side, you are seeing people progress this whole policy of, you know what, we might have to intervene.
Yeah.
So you start just seeing it's bound to happen where an event of a certain nature happens.
Right.
Where the US is forced to respond.
Oh, interesting.
And I don't see it happening in any other way than some sort of armed
intervention. I like to think I know Mexican drug cartels and the logic. Like, they see gringos as dollars. Like, would you harm your the hand that feeds you? I don't see some big massacre happening on like expats. You know what I mean?
No doubt with the Sinaloa cartel and some of its historical members. But the new entities that are coming out.
Oh, right. Because they're wild. They're cowboys.
They're not a legacy brand.
Right.
You know? They're basically coming up, and the way they operate is militarized.
So do they have to get, if they want to like operate in, you know, territory that's claimed by Jalisco, do they have to go get permission? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not just them. I mean, you have the new the Noroeste cartel on the eastern side. Right. And all these smaller groups that are basically looking to see who they're going to join. I mean, you go to places like Colima, and you have this whole swat of a cartel that just switch sides
from
New Generation to Sinaloa, like in a year. Now that's Sinaloa territory.
Right.
Now it's basically a chess game.
Yeah.
And what I see is that Sinaloa has been basically the, it's hard to say the good cartel, but it is.
They are the better.
It's the stable, historically stable. Let's keep shit on the down low. Let's just do business cartel.
They seem more white collar, you know, like a lot of those. And I don't know how much truth there is to this, but, you know, according to Luis, the way a cartel like that operates is that you have two different lanes. You have your drug dealers and then the militarized wing. So the people funding like fentanyl cooks in Colombia, these are white collar guys who probably own agricultural fields. They have huge real estate companies. They send their kids to private schools. They're white, or they're a lot lighter skinned, and they live, you know, in the really glitzy area of Culiacan, and they mix with politicians at cocktail parties, and they have never touched a gun. They probably never even killed anybody.
Yeah.
So, but in order to take over, and essentially what the cartel does is those are the armed, you know, brown people that basically protect the shipments, pay bribes, and then, you know, go touch a motherfucker.
Yeah.
If shit goes sideways.
Yeah.
Is that, it sounds right.
It sounds right. I think the missing piece and something that's come to light in the past 3 years. There was a thing called the Guacamaya leaks recently, which was basically our version of WikiLeaks.
Right.
Somebody somewhere, maybe the opposition party, somebody leaked a shitload of Mexican army documents online. And in those documents that are basically army intelligence documents, they state which parts of the country different military regions are going to favor as far as what cartels are going to work for or what cartels they favor. I mean, this is written by them.
Wow.
There's no getting around them. Which political parties align to which cartel in certain places and who's paying for what campaign. We live in a day and age in Mexico where every single political party has a sponsored cartel. So they're politicized.
Yeah.
Which means they're very much attached.
Can I ask you something? Then how does the army fit in? Are they the ones who organize and facilitate all of this? How does the army fit in between the cartel sponsors and the politicians?
The army is the only permanent institution in Mexico. They don't go away. They don't get voted out. They don't get not elected.
And it sounds like they don't even listen to orders from Mexico City.
At some points.
The president, I mean, the executive branch.
Well, the example of this is Soculia Canasso.
Right.
Which was basically a group of federal agents, part of an intelligence organism of some sort that found themselves in front of the Chapo's son, which they didn't know they were going to arrest. Mm-hmm. And they had to let him go after basically a whole city was being held hostage.
Right.
And then later on, they got their revenge by actually grabbing
him. Right.
And if people don't think that there's any sort of communication or interaction between two entities, later on, his head of security was arrested without a single shot, disarmed and asleep in his house. Mm-hmm. So he was probably
waiting for them.
Handed over.
Yeah.
On a platter.
Right.
So there's some sort of controlling element overall overlapping.
So then where is the money motivation? Obviously, you see how the politicians, they fear for their lives too. Politicians get killed every day in Mexico, right?
Yeah.
But they also are, they want to be funded and they want to take bribes and they want to get paid. But how does the army get paid from all this?
I mean,
the military, I'm sorry.
Well, they're currently now having contracts in airports. They're building airports now, which they didn't used to. Oh, wow. Train the Tren Maya, which is a mega project. They're trying to do a Mexican Panama Canal. Who do you think is going to have that contract?
Yeah, right.
Think about it. A Mexican Panama style canal.
So where does that go through?
The army.
No, but where? How? What river? Oh, what body of water is connecting?
They're
going the to.
They're trying
Pacific.
To figure. They're going to try and figure out a channel.
Wow. So the army. So essentially, we're talking about bid rigging at the highest level. So all of those high level generals are getting those bids, and they, I'm sure, have shell companies
that is the untalked about, unknown darkness about this whole conflict.
Right.
I think, and I think, at least when I started, you saw a militarization of the war against, like, the whole Felipe Calderon war against drugs.
Yeah.
I saw them come out of the military barracks to fight. Mm-hmm. And they are not going back.
Yeah.
So I think that's a maverick. That's the unknown player that people are just not paying attention to.
Right. So they want stability. They want the cartels to have a healthy, different territory where they can operate, and to further their aims of, like, the development of Mexico. They see what's happening. They see how Mexico is going to turn into, like, the China in terms of manufacturing, and they're positioning themselves to benefit from that.
Two things happened this year that's pretty interesting. We have record remesas, which is money coming from Mexicans living in the U.S. sending money back, mm-hmm. which doesn't make any sense because Mexican immigration is at an all-time low.
Right.
So where is all this new money coming from, I guess,
right.
which is weird. People should pay attention to that. And we also saw the Sinaloa cartel send an armed convoy from their controlled territories all the way down south to Chiapas to fight the New Generation cartel on federal roads. No roadblocks, no gunships.
Yeah.
So they're a chess piece.
Yeah.
Something's going on that is basically trying to stabilize things internally. So,
I think a lot of that has to do with migration. They're trying to basically militarize the Mexico's southern border, and so in exchange for that, they allow drugs to pass through
migration
from Guatemala.
Migration is Mexico's only bargaining chip with the United States.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the last time that was an issue was when we had all the migrants camped out in Tijuana,
mm-hmm.
and Mexico basically utilized that as a bargaining chip with the United mm-hmm. States, and Trump said, well, we're going to do tariffs, fuckers.
Right.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
And that stopped for a bit, but that's gone now. Trump's gone. We have a different.
He might be back. He's probably going to be back.
If he comes back,
unless he gets killed or just imprisoned without trial.
Everything at him,
and he's Teflon, dude.
He's
Teflon.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of inspiring. You're like, this guy can overcome anything. So can I.
You know, it's a weird one because Mexicans look at him like, we can get him. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because he speaks a lot of shit. He has a Latin boat mostly.
Yeah.
You're heading into the territory of actually going out there and actually talking to somebody. That's where you're going next, I guess, with your project.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'm not gonna do so much of that. Make too much money just from the living room, you know what I mean? So to speak.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of I am. We've done some vlog episodes and some really cool things. We're going to go to Colombia. I would like to organize something with us where we actually can shoot something on the ground, but here, but, you know, with the internet, the business leads, not the art.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'd love to shoot a documentary that takes 3 months, but I need to replicate that every week.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing about YouTube is like, I'm trying to make it like fast food. Like, we're going to make something cool for as fuck for 15 minutes. And we're just going to keep replicating it because there's so much to talk about. Like, I want to talk about Canada, what's going on there. I want to talk about Mexico. You know, I'm going to do an episode about Tijuana. I want to talk about, did an episode coming out about Ecuador. There's so much happening. I can't possibly be there, you know, nor do I necessarily want to do that much traveling. So we're going to do news pieces with some B-roll from the safety of the great United States.
It's a place. It was once. The border is becoming less and less relevant, and I'm feeling more at home in places like Portland.
Yeah.
Where I see the same issues, which is interesting.
Yeah, Portland's a pretty good place, though. They've cleaned up a lot of the homelessness, a lot of the crime. That's just all right-wing hype. San Francisco is fucked up a little bit. San Francisco is almost as fucked up as they say.
Unless you're the president of China visiting.
Yeah,
they clean up. They clean everything up for President Xi.
It's sad, man. Like, it's, but that's what happens when you have a monopoly on politics.
Yeah.
So, you know, you understand sometimes where you're just like, ugh, I am going to move to Mexico because at least the dishonesty is just like a way of life. Like there's almost no bones, even though of course Mexicans, you guys put on airs, right? Like you never really, but we kind of everybody kind of knows, but like Americans are still posturing like we live in a meritocracy, you know?
Well, I mean, the peso is one of the most stable currencies on the planet.
Yeah.
It's probably because China's hitting the tank and we're probably standing in the next China.
Yeah.
I mean, things are going to boom.
I hope so. And look, you look at these migrants and like, it's like, stay in Tijuana. There's jobs here.
Yeah.
Why the fuck are you going to come to the U.S.? Like, you're going to suffer more there than you would, you know, you get paid in pesos here, but you're not going to be homeless. You can live in a Colima. You can live in a house up made of mud.
Yeah.
You know, like, but that, isn't that better though?
I mean, we had a bunch of Haitian immigrants, the first wave that hit, and they were welcomed.
Yeah.
Locals. I mean, my dad hired like 5 of them.
Yeah.
And they, for some reason, we're Tijuana people think everybody that's black is going to speak English for some reason, you know? So we kept trying to speak English to these people or fucking speak French.
Yeah.
They were great. I mean, they're great.
Yeah.
Low level jobs were being filled by them. And now you see them as business owners and they're great people.
Living in Tijuana.
Living in TJ.
Damn, dude.
Now we have black people and it's like cool. And they dress amazing. I don't know. They're just fucking great people.
Wow. But then
the Hondurans came and some of the migrant waves came and it's a completely different mindset that some of these guys are coming from. I mean, you're seeing videos of them, you know, doing wheelies on their motorcycles in New York City.
Right.
And basically finding the cops and saying, like, we don't want to leave these free housing that you gave us.
Yeah.
That's a different type of immigrant.
That's an entitled criminal kind of.
That's just a different type. Net migration from Mexicans into the United States is down.
Way down.
And it's probably because we're running out of youth also. Because, you know, people are not having that many kids.
You know where they're coming from still in Mexico is Chiapas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We interviewed a group of migrants for this channel that's coming out. And because we met a coyote, but he's an American guy, but he works out of El Paso and he was wearing a mask. You'll see the episode.
What's the new channel you're coming out with?
Oh, it's just going to be called Johnny Mitchell. So it's going to be a spinoff of The Connect,
awesome.
but no guess, but you can actually go watch this episode on The Connect. I'm walking on the border wall in El Paso, right across from Juarez with this guy with a mask on. And he's like, so many people from Chiapas. And that's because it's on fire right now.
Yeah,
from all the cartels.
There used to be one. There still supposedly is this EZLN, this revolutionary group down there that lifted itself from that basically rose up in arms against the government, and they're basically laying down arms.
and taking up bricks.
Yeah, because they, you know, the cartels are too dangerous.
Oh, really? So, so that was like the Zapatistas?
Yeah.
Oh.
So a lot of that thing I mentioned where the Sinaloa cartel basically traversed the country to fight the new generation cartel all the way down there. It's that area. It's on fire.
And they also have, I know because Mexico is industrializing, like when they find like minerals, they'll use cartels to basically clear out indigenous people so companies can take the land.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it's the problem is so complex and everybody's in on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like the main ending of most of these stories down here. Where can people find out more about you? Where can people see your stuff?
Just watch The Connect with Johnny Mitchell. And then just, you know, I'm on the internet, you know, subscribe to both of my channels. You'll see the videos. Follow me on TikTok, Mr. Johnny Mitchell. Same thing on Instagram. You know, if you live in the States, I'm out on the road doing stand-up comedy. So, you know, I just post about it. Just go find me on all those platforms, man.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us. We're about to hit some tacos, probably.
Yes.
Which is going to be an experience, and just roll around and look around.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Cool, man. Thanks, thank you, brother, for coming down.
Now, my pleasure.